Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Nancy Giles, in for Allison Stewart. Thanks for joining me this hour. Today, we're going to dedicate our second hour to New York City's literal bedrock, its architecture. We're starting this hour off by taking a close look at the buildings and design that make up one of this city's newest large-scale development projects, Hudson Yards. In the wake of Amazon's withdrawal from plans to create a second headquarters in Queens, a recent round of articles appeared that explained how that wasn't the only instance of the city providing massive subsidies to large-scale development. The much-lauded Hudson Yards project, which had its grand opening this past Friday, March 15th, had also received billions of dollars in tax breaks. This development includes massive high-tech towers, which will house luxury office and retail space, apartments, and green space, and has been billed as the largest private development in U.S. history. Here to explain the architectural side of Hudson Yards is architecture critic and journalist James Russell. He recently published a piece with City Lab about the development project titled Inside Hudson Yards, Manhattan's Opulent New Mini City. And I'm really pleased that he's able to join us today. James, welcome to All of It.
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. So when did the planning for Hudson Yards actually begin? I heard in the 60s, in the 80s. When did it all start?
Well, that 28 acres of rail yard just has looked juicy for decades, and so people have schemed. But actually, it goes back to the Giuliani era when they conceived maybe you could put a stadium on atop the rail yards for an Olympics bid. Now, that didn't go very far. But then under Bloomberg, Dan Doktoroff, the deputy mayor at the time, really felt it was very – actually, he was promoting the 2012 Olympics before he even joined the administration. And so they – again, the idea of a football stadium or a multipurpose stadium came up. And in the process, they got all the land rezoned for development because the idea – all this development would pay for the stadium.
Right.
Well, this, of course, the Olympic bid did not happen for New York, but the rezoning was there. So in 2008, not an ideal year, they kind of put it out to bid with the idea that a developer would come in, build this massive thing, the city would benefit, and the MTA would get $1 billion out of the deal for renting the space over their yards.
Okay.
Well, it got really complicated in 08 because of the crash, and so the current development team is actually the third, the related companies with Oxford Properties. And so then they, with a lot of stops and starts after the bad economy, they proceeded, and here we are.
Here we are. Now, what's interesting, though, is that the whole project is built on top of active train tracks, and somehow the way those train tracks were structured, it lent itself to something being built above it. Isn't that correct?
Well, I have been told that that had happened, that when it got laid out, they had put extra space between the tracks
right.
So that you could put in columns and piers. It's certainly maddeningly crazy to think about doing that, sticking in huge piers and then a huge platform while the trains are going back and forth. But of course, Grand Central Station did the same thing, Terminal City that runs up Park Avenue, is all built on pilings from the, 1909.
Right.
So it's not unprecedented, but it's not simple.
Yeah, not. And it seems strangely scary to me. How many city blocks does Hudson Yards make up?
I think it is 8.
And how many towers are there in total?
Well, now, see, they only have done half of the yards. You can still see the trains
right.
on the western yards near the river. And so atop the eastern yards, which is what they just opened, kind of all at once almost, are 6 towers. One of them is sort of barely out of the ground, but the others are pretty close to being done,
okay,
if not done. And it's a mix of office space and also some very snazzy residential towers, and one tower that has a hotel, a gigantic Equinox, office space, and high-end apartments.
Well, I'm jumping around a little bit, but we can't talk about the plaza without that big structure, that big kind of art piece in the middle of it. Can you? What is it called?
Well, it's currently called The Vessel, but in fact, they're having a contest to rename it.
Oh, are they?
I kind of like The Vessel myself.
Some people call it the Social Climber. Is that correct?
I like that.
It's got these stairs and whatnot and people. So what do you think that impact on that open space is, that structure?
Well, you know, it's kind of a basket weave that goes up 150 feet. I mean, it's gigantic. It's not a subtle little thing.
No.
It's not a little artwork in the middle of a plaza. It's a very big thing that kind of looms over and sort of takes over the plaza. It's like a sort of over-assertive dinner guest. You can't really avoid it. It's very elegantly made, and all it is stairs and landings. But so whether people will find this completely fascinating or completely ridiculous, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
I found it relatively fascinating. It's really eloquent or elegantly made. It's a beautiful thing. It's by Thomas Heatherwick, who's quite a character from London. And he makes these kind of really crowd-pleasing installations in cities. And they call this a three-dimensional public space.
So. I like that. And you can burn calories going up and down the steps.
Well, you can.
So it has a certain practicality to it as well. Can you talk us through how the city came to get together the money for these projects? I think it was $5 billion. Some of it was dedicated to infrastructure. Some was for Hudson Yards. Some was for the subway. How did they kind of cull these different funds together?
Well, the developers, of course, are supposed to put up most of the money.
Okay.
But the idea of the city is that certain investments had to be made to make this happen. So the most prominent one is extending the number 7 line from Times Square to very close to the development. It also serves the Javits Convention Center, which is handy, and a huge amount of additional development that's supposed to happen to the north. So they did that. And part of that additional development is a little skinny park that they call Hudson Park and Boulevard. And so the city paid for that. The city, and then there's a maze of subsidies. And, you know, I think probably it would take the entire week to explain them, which I think is on purpose. I think they made it purposely complex and opaque so that no one could actually figure out where the money is.
Really?
So that's actually what the, you know, public service performed by this group out of the New School, who's tried to sort it all out and say, where's all the money going and where's it coming from?
Right. You wrote that Hudson Park is costing a colossal $1.1 billion. And when you compare that to the 1.3-mile-long, 85-acre Brooklyn Bridge Park, which was $350 million, one wonders, why is this park costing so much more than other big park projects? Why?
I'd love to know.
Do you have any idea?
You know, I would like to dig into that. I found that out a little late in the game, and other people don't seem to have really noticed it. It's an insane amount of money for a park. They say it's 4 acres. I actually think it's a little bigger than that.
Okay.
But it's nice little park, but it's just a little park, and I can't figure out what's really special that would make it cost all that money. And I tried to reach the Hudson Yards Infrastructure Corporation that is responsible. They didn't respond. So I think, you know, this will bear more investigation because I don't get it.
Right. I mean, do you think the city thinks that this kind of massive investment, not only in the park, but the whole project is going to pay off at some point?
Yes, they're still convinced. Everything costs more money than they thought. So the city's on, that's where this sort of $5 billion or $6 billion, depending on who you read, comes from, is because the city was supposed to be on the hook for this amount of money for a temporary time. And then revenues from the development, instead of paying property taxes, they pay in to defer the cost of the city's investment.
Okay.
And so then once it's free and clear, all the money goes to the city and all the jobs, et cetera, are supposed to be the public benefit. But
supposed to be.
Well, you know, the other thing that the report from the New School said was, you know, they're mostly not new jobs. Well, the mall are all new jobs. They have a mall there. But people moving from Midtown into the development, because it's all the sort of blue chip finance firms, media, what do they call it, Warner Media now, because they can't call it Time Warner anymore, is there. BlackRock, a gigantic, you know, investment organization.
Yeah, that's what I've been noticing. So, I've been noticing all these vacancies in places now, then those businesses are now moving to Hudson Yards.
So, you know, in the end, maybe there'll be a lot more jobs.
Okay.
Because maybe all the Midtown space will fill up again. You know, that remains to be seen.
We hope.
Also, the development to the north, in theory, much more square footage than is already there, if you can imagine, is, you know, once it's there, then you can really run the numbers and figure out if it paid.
Right. Let's hope. Well, we were talking about public space and green space. Can you explain how that public space in Hudson Yards, even though it's open to the public, it's actually on private land. Is that right?
Well, it's a leased land, leased from the MTA.
Okay.
So some people say, oh, it's gated. It's not gated. It is completely open to the public, like a public park is.
All right.
It's 5 acres. Actually, half the site is devoted to open space, and that was thanks to the Department of City Planning, and I think it's a real saving grace. It's a very underparked part of the city, so it's a valuable resource, and you can walk in from the High Line, or you can walk in from that other park from the north. It may not be possible yet. It's a lot of construction. It's a quite developed plaza. I was thinking, oh, it's all going to be pavement and then there's going to be an artwork. Well, now there's the giant vessel. But in fact, it's very nicely, well, you won't be able to see it for a month or so they have some plants, but they're probably going to die or be pulled out. Yeah, this is not the time for plants, as the landscape architect is saying, please, this is not going to be it. So when it all grows in and greens in, and especially when the trees get mature, it'll look actually like a very, sort of lush public plaza. And there's lots of places to sit, and it's nice.
That part is really nice. Yeah. And let's see, it's also supposed to be this green space, and that one of the big features about the development is the green architecture. What about the whole structure is environmentally friendly? Can you give us
some idea? Well, they did some things. I would say, as someone who has a lot of expertise in this area, I wouldn't say it's highly adventurous. But the buildings, you know, are what you might call a good standard for energy efficiency. They're going to capture all the stormwater on site, which is a good thing for climate change, because all our storm sewers are getting overwhelmed by all the rain we're having that we didn't used to have. And it's raised above. Now, what I don't know is whether they actually raised the MTA rail yards above flood level.
Which would be very helpful.
Yeah, but of course, a lot of money, and then the development would be even higher up. Anyway, but the one saving grace there is they can move all the trains when they know a flood is going to come. Oh. So I don't know. 40 years from now, it could be bad news, but I don't really know.
But for now, it might be decent news. We're speaking with James Russell, who's an architecture critic and journalist, and he recently published a piece with City Lab about Hudson Yards, titled Inside Hudson Yards, Manhattan's Opulent New Mini-City. And I'm getting a better idea of this structure that in my world has mostly just been the barrier to me getting out of the Lincoln Tunnel and into Manhattan. That's where I look at Hudson Yards from where I live. Can you talk about what kind of tech is featured in the building's designs?
They aren't as advanced as some buildings. I think, you know, they've regarded it as a very futuristic thing, but it's a little bit of a slightly dated development model.
I didn't know that.
Because they explain it's like, well, we think it's going to be really a millennial workforce, et cetera. But millennials tend to like, you know, like warehouse buildings in, you know, down in this part of town, you know, like you're surrounded by tech here.
Right.
And they kind of like that environment of being in the city. And this is much sleeker, you know, with these very glassy, super tall buildings and the big mall, which is actually, no matter what they say, it's like it's an experience. It's a new mall. It's been reconceived. It's a mall.
But malls are kind of old school. You're absolutely right.
Whether I am not a retail expert, whether it has the mix that's really attractive to a lot of people, well, we'll see. It's gigantic and it has I think something like 30 places to eat in it. So that's not bad.
Well, that's lovely. But, you know, we can't talk about that big development without talking about housing. What are the price ranges of the apartments that are there? And is there any affordable housing in that structure?
Yeah, because they got tax breaks, they did do some affordable housing. I think about 100 units. There's not that much housing in this piece of it. It's mostly offices. The second part will be more, and then they'll do more affordable housing. So ultimately, it's going to have 4,000 units of housing, of which I believe 20% will be affordable. Of course, there's a real range from what some of us would not call affordable, but is below market.
I mean, the price range that I've seen so far runs on the low end from $5 million to $240 million if you're purchasing an apartment. The rentals I've seen are upwards of $5,000. So, you know, qu'est-ce que c'est affordable?
No, that's the market. Those are the market.
Okay.
Housing,
well, actually, they're called below market housing. I don't even know if they're referred to as affordable.
Yeah, some of it is.
Right?
I think that was my term. They would say affordable. I like below market because it sort of says, okay, if market is, you know, $5,000 a month and below market is $3,000 a month, but that's still not affordable to very many people.
No, I appreciate you calling it below market.
So that's really what I'm talking about. There are some very inexpensive units, but you're going to have to get into this lottery, which maybe has already been done. And, you know, they'll have, as happens with these things, you know, 50,000 applicants for, you know, 100 apartments.
My goodness.
And don't get me started about how complicated it is to figure all this out, and unnecessarily so. But that's not the developer's fault. That's the way it's done.
Right.
But the developers got very nice tax breaks and got more ability to build more space because of including affordable units.
That's how they get some
breaks.
That's
the deal. That's how it's done here in New York nowadays.
Yes. Can you talk to us a little bit about this thing called The Shed? This is a cultural venue that's part of the project. What is it exactly?
Well, I called it a cultural venue looking for a reason to exist, and they found it relatively recently. But really, having a cultural facility was mandated from the beginning as part of the development, really to make it more diverse than just offices and restaurants and really expensive apartments. So The Shed, you know, developed over time as this venue for all of the arts to come together. So it's exhibition, it's performance, it's different kinds of performance, and, you know, and big giant spectacles, a little bit like they do in the Park Avenue Armory, because it is this big shed-like structure that's covered, you know, it's like an exploded rail car. I mean, a giant rail car, because it actually rolls back and forth.
Wow.
And so the idea is when it's rolled out, you can have big things like art fairs or flower shows or, you know, theatrical spectacles that involve huge numbers of people. And then when they're not using it, then they push it back
out. They can roll it back in. And it's also kind of wired. It's very high-tech space.
Right.
So it can attract all kinds of high-tech, I guess, events.
Yeah, they tried to make it as flexible as possible so that you can do any kind of event in any of the... You can have an exhibit in a space one day, and then you can have a dance performance the next. You know, they can do... The idea is to make it very flexible.
That's kind of cool. Kind of like a Manhattan answer to BAM or something like that, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it
High tech or BAM.
A lot like the... You know, I think BAM wants to be part of it. Everybody wants to be part of it for now. I've heard the Philharmonic wants to be part of it, but I don't think it's a real acoustical space of that kind.
Something about a rolling train car doesn't sound like it would be, you know, acoustically nice. Is it possible, do you think, that some of the housing that's available there might end up being more investment properties for people as opposed to a real lived-in space?
Yeah, I mean, that happens to all the, especially the high-end housing. I mean, if you're spending $20 million for an apartment, then you have many houses. So this is only one of your houses, and to get the tax break of owning it, you have to be here for X number of days a year. I forget what it is. But yeah, these people regard them as investment properties. Mm-hmm. They regard them as places to launder money, which has been revealed in a lot of press reporting.
Goodness.
So not always the nicest people are buying into these things. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, are these people going to be the ones activating this place? No, they're not. It's going to be the people coming to the public space and coming to the mall and all that. That's what's going to make it. If it becomes lively and fun and desirable, that's what's going to do it.
James Russell, thank you so much for giving us some background and unpacking what is Hudson Yards for us here today. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
After the break, we're going to continue our hour on architecture with Frampton Tolbert of the Queens Modern Project. This is All of It on WNYC. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.